Good evening. Just get myself sorted. Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me. I know you didn't all personally invite me, but on your behalf, Eric did, and I'm really, really glad to be here. So my name's Amy. I'm not from the Northeast. You can usually work that one out from my accent. But I have lived up here for nearly 15 years now. My husband is from Stockton, and we met 15 years ago doing a Youth for Christ gap year, and got engaged, and we're trying to work out where to live. I'm from Surrey, so the option was, you know, let's pay through the nose to live in Surrey, or let's come and live in the Northeast. So I was like, let's do it. And I've been here ever since, and I absolutely love it up here. So we live in Norton, been married, as I say, nearly 14 years in a couple of weeks. It'll be our 14th wedding anniversary. I was really young when we got married, really, really, really young. As of last year, we became parents. We adopted our little boy last June, officially. It was the last day of June, but it was still June. So last June, our little boy Jack came home. So that's wonderful. So that's a little bit about me. I work for Home for Good. I've been working for Home for Good for about 2.5 years now. Although I did have a break in the middle when we adopted. I had some adoption leave, which is wonderful. Just like maternity leave, adoption leave is just great. I love it. Brilliant. So my role for Home for Good is content and communications manager, which basically means anything to do with words, that's what I do. So I write all the content for our website, I write our newsletters, I tell people about what's going on, and I write our kind of resources and courses and campaigns and things like that. But for you to understand more of that, I need to tell you what Home for Good is and what Home for Good does, and then you'll kind of grasp a little bit more about what I do within it. So it's a real privilege to come and share with you about Home for Good and some of what we do. But also, I want to talk to you tonight about these two words up on the screen, hope and hospitality. And because as I was preparing, I kind of felt God say to me that this wasn't just information sharing. I could stand here, and I would love to at some point, you know, I could talk to you for hours about Home for Good and all the things that we do. But actually, I felt God challenge me and say, let's recognize these two very, very important things of hope and hospitality. And these two things are integral to Home for Good. They're absolutely fundamentally integral to Home for Good. But I also think they are something for all of us. They're something for all of us as Christians to be grasping and thinking about what does it mean to be a person of hope? And what does it mean to be a person of hospitality? And what does it mean for our church to be a place of hope and our church to be a place of hospitality? So I'm going to talk about these two things, but I'll start by telling you a little bit more about Home for Good. So we're a national charity that was officially launched in 2014, so we just had our third birthday a few weeks ago. And our heart is to inspire and equip the church across the UK to care about vulnerable children. And I'm sure pretty much most churches do, they just might not know how to do that. They might not even be aware of the need, they might not even be aware of the situation or the circumstances. So we want to raise awareness, we want to help people realise and recognise what's going on and what's needed. And we also want to help, therefore, to the church to recognise the value and the importance of fostering and adoption as part of caring for vulnerable children. So, as I say, we care deeply for vulnerable children. And we do that because God cares deeply for vulnerable children. And time and again throughout the Bible, we hear of God's heart for the vulnerable in our society. We hear about his heart for those who have no social or economic or cultural power, those who suffer at the hands of others, the poor and the forgotten and the destitute. And very often you get this kind of list of people that God cares about. God cares about the poor. God cares about the refugee. God cares about the widow. God cares about the orphan. They're often grouped together. And this is what it says in the book of Deuteronomy. For the Lord your God is the God of gods and Lord of lords. He is the great God, the mighty and awesome God who shows no partiality and cannot be bribed. He ensures that orphans and widows receive justice. He shows love to the foreigners living among you and gives them food and clothing. Now, just to be clear, the contemporary reality is that the majority, the vast, vast majority of children who come into the care system are not orphans in simplistic traditional terms. And that's really important to recognise. But these are children who, for whatever reason, and there's a whole complex myriad of reasons, but for whatever reason, their birth families are unable to care for them, unable to provide the care that they need, the care that they deserve. Now, obviously, my hope is that the church will also be seeking to engage and support families and also be working with families and helping them and walking with them and helping them to learn how to parent if they've never been parented and helping those who have addictions, helping those who've suffered domestic abuse and all of those different things. I hope that our churches are a place of sanctuary and safety and recovery and restoration. And there's so many brilliant organisations who are working with those groups and with those people and supporting them and striving to make a significant difference. But sadly, the truth is, children are still coming into care. And children come into care possibly at an alarming rate. It's estimated that in any given year in the UK, about 35,000 children will come into the care system. And currently in England, just in England, there are 72,000 children who are in the care system. In the northeast, it's 4,800, and here in Middlesbrough Local Authority, the last figures were issued in March, and it was 440. 440 children and young people who, for whatever reason, sadly, can't be cared for by the birth families and are having to be cared for. The numbers, they kind of estimate there's a sort of somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 children currently waiting for adoption, and they reckon about 7,000 more foster care families are needed in order that every child can have the right placement that they need. Now, Home for Good exists because of those numbers, but the reason we exist is because they're not just numbers, are they? They're lives, they're children. They're so, so, so precious children. And these aren't just any children, although all children are infinitely precious. But these are children who've suffered, often they've suffered neglect or abuse. They may have witnessed things or been exposed to things or experienced things that no child should ever experience. They've all of them have suffered trauma and they've suffered loss. Even those tiny ones who maybe have to come into care at birth, they've still suffered loss. They've still lost something that's important to them. They've still suffered the trauma of that. And that loss is so significant, it will stay with them for their whole lives. Now, Home for Good has four main aims. So I'm going to just share a little bit about each one and what kind of the outworking of it looks like, because they're just kind of fancy words that we put on paperwork, but I'll unpack them a little bit for you. Our first aim, which we call spiritual pace setting, which always makes me think like we need to start kind of running and doing like those things where you kind of run from here to there and have to do a target kind of, I can't remember what they're called, intervals or something like that. Anyway, I always think of that and I'm like, no, that's not me at all. We say spiritual pace setting because we want the church to kind of recognize and begin to understand our biblical remit as Christians to respond to the needs of vulnerable children. And we want to raise awareness in the UK church to see that there is a great need here for the church to do something in response to those numbers that I just shared. And we also want the church to therefore recognise the importance and the value and the need for foster and adoptive families. And just as the Bible repeatedly teaches about God's heart for vulnerable children, it also repeatedly commands us to respond with that same heart. In Isaiah chapter 1, which is probably like a really, really tough chapter, but in Isaiah chapter 1, God speaks directly and he says, I'm just going to read you a few verses. They're not up on the screen, but I'll read them for you. It says, "What makes you think I want all of your sacrifices, says the Lord? I'm sick of your burnt offerings. I get no pleasure from the blood of bulls and the lambs and goats. When you come to worship me, who asked you to pray? For parade through my courts with all of your ceremony. Stop bringing me your meaningless gifts. As for your celebrations and your special days, they are all false. I hate your celebrations." This is like God, oh my goodness, it's like quite heavy. And he keeps going through the point, and he gets to the point where he says, "Learn to do good. Seek justice, help the oppressed, defend the cause of the orphan, and fight for the rights of the widow." And it's not that he doesn't love our sacrifices. It's not that he doesn't love that our celebrations and the things that we do, because God does love those things. But we have to couple those with justice and with engaging with the vulnerable and helping them and meeting their needs. And it's all very well us if we were just kind of in our nice, cozy churches singing wonderful, beautiful songs. But we also need to be engaging with the most vulnerable in our society and helping them and reaching them. And as it says in this verse, defending the cause, defending, standing on their behalf, advocating for them, standing up for them. And the Bible calls us repeatedly to do that. It says it's part of our worship. To care for the vulnerable is part of our worship to God. So we want, Home for Good wants to make sure that the church is aware of this. So many churches are. It's so brilliant. We're kind of coming across more and more churches who are grasping this and saying, amazing, yes, let's step up. Let's make this part of our ministry, part of what we're doing. And like churches do brilliant, brilliant things. Like, I, you know, the amount of things that churches engage with, I recognize that, you know, you in any given week, you can be, you know, helping with a food bank and going out and doing, you know, poverty issues and doing all of these things. And sometimes it feels a little bit overwhelming because there's this massive list of things that we need to do. And then on the end, it says, and also care for the orphan, also help vulnerable children. And it's huge. I understand that. But it's part of our calling, it's part of our command, it's part of what God has for us. It's so close to his heart, and therefore it must be close to our heart as well. Our second aim is we call finding homes, and our sort of strap line that we use, there's a home for every child who needs one. And we're passionate about finding homes for vulnerable children. And sometimes a child might need a home for just a few weeks or a few months while things are getting sorted and while things can be put in place to make sure that they can then return safely into their birth family home. And sometimes children might need a slightly longer term home while things are kind of really getting worked out and have to go through court processes and things like that. And sometimes children will need a new home forever through adoption or through long-term care. And Home for Good believes in all types of care. There's so many. I could go through them all, but I won't because we'd be here all night. But there's so many different types of care through fostering, through adoption. And we wholeheartedly believe in the right plan for the child. That's our hope and that's our heart. So we, as Home for Good, we encourage individuals and families to think about fostering or adoption, to consider it within their family planning, to consider it within their circumstances. And please hear that it is not for everyone. Absolutely not. It's just not right. It's not right for everybody. That's fine. That's okay. It doesn't have to be. We're not all called to do the same things. But it might be right for some. And it's right to consider it. And it's right to think about our families and think about what we could do to help and support those who might need us. And actually, the fact is, if just one more family in every church in the UK was able to open up their home and foster or adopt, all of those, you know, those numbers would be null and void, because we'd have met the need that there is for more foster and adoptive families. So yeah, so we ask people to consider it, to think about it, and to explore it. The third thing Home for Good does is supporting families. And the absolute honest reality is that it is not easy to foster or adopt. And if anyone ever tells you otherwise, send them to me and I'll tell them that it's not true. It's not easy. It's just not easy. And we'll never ever pretend that it is. Because you see, due to early life experiences, or perhaps even pre-life experiences when the children were in the womb, so often the children in the care system are going to be coming with a load of stuff that's going on in their lives, a load of things that they've experienced. Perhaps they'll have additional needs or health complications. They're likely to have emotional struggles, perhaps not always be able to build relationships in the same way because they haven't had those early foundations built in them and those building blocks that they need. So perhaps they might have developmental delays. They might not kind of be at the same kind of rate as other children. And whatever it might be, they're precious, precious children who are trying to cope and make sense of everything that's happened to them. And often that means they're going to have really, really big feelings. And often that kind of comes out in their behaviour because, you know, they're children having to deal and cope with huge things that I know I as an adult would struggle to cope with. And so, yes, often they're going to have challenging behaviours. They're going to have stuff that they need to work through. It's going to cost a lot to kind of work with them and support them and keep going. And fostering adoption is not easy. And having a strong support network is absolutely vital. Absolutely vital. And so Home for Good wants the UK church to be the most loving and welcoming and accepting and understanding support network that there is. That's what our hope is that the church can be a place that says, we understand, we recognise this. And so we want to equip the church to wrap around families who foster or adopt, to prioritise their needs, to be willing to adapt and change where needed, and to seek to journey with families through those challenging circumstances, through the pain, through the difficulties, with a heart of love and grace and acceptance. And our fourth thing that we've kind of started to look at in the last year or so is we realised that we exist in a whole load of systems and structures, and some of them are really good, and there's some amazing professionals working in really, really challenging circumstances to try and do the very, very best for vulnerable children. But sadly, not all systems and structures work for the benefit of children and the families who care for them. So Home for Good advocates for better improvements, and we're kind of engaging in Parliament, engaging with MPs, trying to get this stuff kind of on the agenda, and actually make a difference in that way, trying to engage in conversations and influence decisions. And also we want to enable the church to be able to do that in the right way as well. So those are sort of the four areas in which we work, and we do a whole load of different things to do those things. And one of them is things like this, where we come and speak in churches, which is an amazing opportunity. But the beginning of last year, before my little boy even came home, I was in a meeting at Home for Good, and somebody happened to use a phrase, and I was like, oh, wow, like, that was, it kind of just struck me. So these words, hope and hospitality. Now, I'm a real fan of words. It's my job. It's what I do. I have an English degree. I read books for, you know, that's my life, really. I really like these words, partly because they're alliterative and it's the same letter. So I'm like, oh, that works. And then so Home for Good, that's an H as well. Yeah, it really fits nicely. But the truth is, as we dig down into these words and we recognize the significance of them for the whole church, and we realize that these things are not just about those who directly care for the vulnerable, not just about those who might be able to foster or adopt. But I think these two things teach us something about what we're called to be as the church, what we're called to be as a people of hope and a people of hospitality. And my hope tonight is that you hopefully will be inspired to find out a bit more about Home for Good, and I can give you a whole wealth of information about that. How you can be involved in caring for vulnerable children, not necessarily directly, but in various ways, how you can pray, how you can support, how you can give, all of those things. I'd love that, but actually, really, all I'm asking for you to do tonight is to ask that question, how can I be a person of hope, and how can I be a person of hospitality? That's enough, if that's all you do, I'm good with that. I'd love it if you also found out about Home for Good, but let's focus on being a person of hope and being a person of hospitality. When I think about hope, I'm reminded of an amazing verse in Romans chapter 4, which I think I've got for you to come up on the screen. A little verse, Romans chapter 4, 18, it says, "Against all hope, Abraham, in hope, believed." When absolutely everything was against him, and when things were humanly impossible, when the situation was completely and absolutely hopeless, Abraham, in hope, believed. The New Living Translation, it puts it this way, "Even when there was no reason for hope, Abraham kept hoping." And it's fascinating, when you look at Abraham's story, and I kind of flicked through Genesis 12, to kind of Genesis 21, which is like the from when he's first told that he's going to be the father of a great nation to then Isaac being born, which is like 9 chapters later. If you read through those chapters, just kind of blitz them through, it's like mistake after mistake after mistake. I mean, actually, you actually get shocked by how badly things go and how many mistakes Abraham makes along the way. And all the things he does wrong, he has a lack of faith, he tells lies, he lets himself be manipulated, he's impatient, and he willingly goes against God's plan. And he did all of that, and yet still, Paul writes this about him: "Even when there was no reason for hope, Abraham kept hoping." And that gives me hope. And of course, ideally, our faith journey hopefully isn't quite as checkered as Abraham's, but let's be honest, it probably is. let's be honest. And you see, our understanding of hope is all too often, I think, limited by the kind of airy possibility of when you're kind of heading into a car park, and you're, I really hope I get a space, or oh, I really hope it doesn't rain today. And we have these sort of throwaway comments that actually don't at all capture the reality of hope from the Bible and what the depth of what it actually means. Because in the Bible, hope is a confident expectation. Hope is an assurance. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew words, the verb to hope and the noun a hope, both of them have right at the root the idea of expectation, the belief that it will happen. And the Greek word that Paul uses here and lots of other places, it comes from the verb to welcome. So it's like welcoming hope, like it's about to happen, like expecting. And so we have this problem that kind of hope has become this sort of wishy-washy nothing kind of possibility, or maybe, or I hope it doesn't rain today, kind of, when actually, biblically, we have an assured hope in Jesus. We have a real expectation and a trust and a faith in Jesus. And so, like Abraham, even when no logical or sensible or worldly reason to hope exists, we can still remain hopeful. I remember when we were going through the process to adopt our little boy, we had to do some training, a series of preparation training days. And one of those sessions, the medical advisor came to speak to us, because that's really good. It's good to get an understanding. And she shared really interesting things. And it was challenging and difficult, because it's the reality of how things are. And she got to the end and she said, we'll do everything we can. You know, we're always going to try and do our very best by these children. But ultimately, we can't work miracles. And I remember sitting there and just thinking, I know someone who can. And now, please don't get me wrong. It's really important I say I'm not in any way simplifying the deep and profound struggles that children in care face. And actually, I think it's a quite dangerous thinking to sort of kind of say, oh, if I just pray enough, or if I just love them enough, then it will fix everything and everything will be wonderful. And absolutely, we do pray for our children. We do love our children. And God can do immeasurably more than we could ever imagine. But we have to hold that in the tension of the reality, because these are really difficult and complex situations. And so our challenge is to find hope in the midst of that, to find hope and cling on in the midst of those difficulties, in the face of those challenges. And that's going to be the case whatever you're doing, whatever you're facing in life. Sometimes things are just tough. Sometimes things are just difficult. Sometimes you have no control over certain circumstances. But will we, in those situations, hold on to hope? Will we be people of hope? There's no kind of, I don't know, simple magic prayer that means everything suddenly gets better and go away. And sadly, it would be so nice if there was, but there's not. So I just want to share with you a little bit from Isaiah chapter 40, which is a really familiar passage, I'm sure, to many of you. I'm going to read, I'll just read it. It goes over three slides, just to say, so I'll kind of keep going. Look up into the heavens. Who created all of the stars? He brings them out like an army, one after another, calling each by its names. Because of his great power and incomparable strength, not a single one is missing. Oh, Jacob, how can you say that the Lord does not see your troubles? Oh, Israel, how can you say God ignores your rights? Have you not heard? Don't you understand? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who hope in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. And that word hope in verse 31 at the end, it's often, you're maybe in different versions of the Bible, it's interchangeably, it's used with faith and with trust, those who have faith in the Lord, those who wait on the Lord, those who trust in the Lord. I think the best translation I've come across is the Amplified Bible, where it really expands on each of the words. And in the Amplified Bible, it says, those who wait for the Lord with confident expectation, seeking him with hope, shall renew their strength and power. And that's the promise that we have. That's the promise that if we can hold on and keep going, then we will be that people of hope. If we can just cling on and trust in him and trust that he has got this and he is holding this. then we will have the power and the strength to go on as we are a person of hope. So the next word is hospitality. And this is a really brilliant, excellent word in the Greek. I love it when the words just are really funny. It's philoxenia, which is kind of two words smushed together, philos, which means friend, friendly, and then xenos, which means stranger. So hospitality literally means stranger friend, friend to strangers. And it means to offer friendship to those who you do not know, those who are different from you. And I found this really challenging when I looked into it, because I always thought I was really good at hospitality. I love cooking, so I love to have people around for dinner. So I'm like, I'm great at hospitality. Come and have a cup of tea. Come and have dinner. Like, you know, I'm good. I was like, I'm down with this. I'm really, really good at hospitality. And it turns out, really, I think what I was good at was I was really great at fellowship. I was really great at, well, I was about to say I'm really great at friendship. Sometimes, let's hope I'm really good at friendship. But those things are important too. It's really important to have fellowship and to have friendship and to have your friends around and cook, share a meal with them. That's vital. That's so important. But real hospitality is when we're friends to strangers, being a friend to the stranger. I've actually heard a lot about strangers this year. Home for Good. Our founder is a guy called Krish Kandaya, and he's a speaker, writer, theologian. He was the president of the London School of Theology for a while, and he's brilliant, brilliant guy. And his most recent book is called God is Stranger. I've got a few copies if you're interested. It is the most amazing and challenging book, and I say challenging because it challenges us to really think about how we welcome the stranger and how what it truly means for us as Christians to be truly and radically hospitable and to be friends to strangers. And it is hugely challenging. It has the potential to rip apart our cozy, comfortable lives for the sake of something so much bigger. And in Romans chapter 12, it says this: always be eager to practice hospitality. And literally in the Greek, that means like always like chase after it, pursue it, seek it out, run after it, like desperately try and do it. We should be desperate to love strangers, desperate to welcome the strangers into our hearts, into our homes. We should be forever looking for opportunities to serve and to help those that we do not yet know. And obviously, one way to practice this kind of hospitality is to foster and to adopt. Someone once told me, asked me, like, how can you love a child that you didn't give birth to? And I was like, well, I don't know, because I haven't given birth to any child. So, but I was like, because I wasn't biologically connected to this child, like, how could I love them? And I'm like, well, I'm not biologically connected to my husband, but I love him, so that's okay. But I was just, like, blown away by that. But it's true. My son was a stranger to me. The first day I met him, like, complete stranger. But that doesn't stop the fact that I love him, and I can't even comprehend and explain. I can't give you the words. And that's exactly what it is. So clearly one way to practice radical hospitality is through fostering and adoption. And perhaps for some people, that is something for you to explore, to think about. And I would absolutely encourage you to explore and maybe think about it. Maybe in the future, some of you are quite young. I'm not saying like this, you know, go fill out an application and start getting assessed. It doesn't quite work like that. But think about it as you're building your family in the future. But along with our own homes, our churches also need to be a place of hospitality. And as I've reflected on this, I've been reminded of a film clip. And it's only really short, and I'm going to show it to you because, you know, lighten the atmosphere a little bit. It's from a really great film called Toy Story 3. So it's just for a minute or two. This just inspires me.
Don't you tell me I'm not the one. Don't you tell me I ain't no fun. Just tell me you love me like I love you. You know you do. When we're together, gray skies clearer, and I cheer up. really from the bottom of my heart. I just can't take when we're apart.
Just a little bit to whet your appetite. I'm going to watch Toy Story now. You see, the thing is, like, I know it's really silly, but it looks really tough to be a toy in that room of the nursery. Like, they're little ones who just chuck them around and throw them around, and obviously I know they're just toys, but in Toy Story that means they're real. And it's really, really difficult for them, and you get bashed up and you get trampled, and stuff happens to you, you've no control over it. You don't deserve it, you don't expect it. Life is challenging and difficult. And the image that stuck with me is the point where the toy gets thrown underneath the counter and there's the rest of the toys and they're going, come on, you can do it, you can do it. And then another toy like steps in and goes, right, I'll take it for you now. And he like swaps places so that he goes out and gets bashed up for a little while. And also when the new toys arrive, and there's Ken, and he's like sunning himself, you know, comfortable, having a great time. And he's like, oh, new toys. And he runs to meet them. And he goes out and they grab them and he welcomes them in. And he kind of sets aside his own agenda, his own comfort, and he goes out to find them, to welcome them in, draw them in. You never thought you'd get Toy Story 3 to be quite so spiritual. But the truth is, I think there's so much we can learn as the church from those ideas. To think, could we be that kind of place of welcome when someone new and different comes in and we embrace them wholly? And we say, come in and we'll change things so that it works for you. We'll adapt, we'll be flexible, we'll come alongside you. And when people come in who are burdened and who are bruised and who are broken and who are going through a really tough time, we'll cheer them on and we'll provide a safe place where they can recuperate and we'll walk with them on their journey. And perhaps, you know, we often actually use this clip when we're talking about how to support foster and adoptive families in the church, because sometimes that's all foster and adoptive families need, is they just need someone who's cheering them on in the background, and kind of there's like Ken giving them a massage, and sometimes like actually tagging in and saying, let me look after your kids for a while, let me, you know, get to know them well enough so that I can support you and I can help you and be there with you and walk on this journey with you. And so perhaps that could be something that you could do. If you can't directly care for vulnerable children, you could support families who do in that way. But wouldn't it be amazing for our churches, I'm sure your church is like this, but wouldn't it be amazing if all of our churches were known as being a place of welcome and acceptance and of love and of comfort, and come in so that we can make it easy for you. We can change our stuff so that you can fit in and you can come and be welcome here. And I think that's our calling as the church, to a real and radical hospitality where we're friends with the strangers, with friends with those people who are different to us. And we might not always understand. We might struggle with them. Maybe that's someone of a different nationality, a different ethnicity, or they've had a significantly different life experience, or they have a different life outlook. Or maybe it's a child whose early life experiences means that they're struggling and that means their behavior is challenging. Whatever it could be, could we be a place that welcomes them and accepts them and offers never-ending, overwhelming love and grace so that they are welcomed?